Hello, this is Missy Ollander from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the News and Observer's Restaurant Reviews. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Before we get started, I just want to go over again the what the ratings mean. 5 stars mean extraordinary, 4 stars excellent, 3 stars above average, 2 stars average, and 1 star fair. And the first restaurant we're going to review is Waragi, and that's spelled W-A-R-A-G-I, and they're located at 5910-147 Durley Road in Raleigh. Their phone number is 783-1883, and they received 4 stars. Sitting at the sushi bar, watching Masatoshi Sugimura as he deftly slices ribbons of silver-skinned mackerel, ruby-fleshed tuna, and ivory escalar, I can't help thinking about the first time I ate here. It was 1997, and the restaurant had been open a few weeks. But Chef Masa, as he is called, already had many years of experience under his belt. A native of the coastal Japanese city of Shimonoseki, Masa had worked at the first sushi bar in Central Florida before moving to Raleigh, where he built a loyal local following as head sushi chef at Kanki. His reputation was richly deserved, as I was to discover. Masa's seemingly effortless knife work was precise, his fish unfailingly fresh-tasting, and his rice properly vinegared. Packing up the sushi bar was a kitchen that turned out the most extensive offering around, giving the area its first taste of exotic dishes such as Japanese mountain potato with quail egg. Waragi looks pretty much the same now as it did then, from the wasabi-green tatami roots to the sparkling river of glass blocks set into the back wall. Nowadays, Masa may be joined behind the sushi bar by as many as 3 other well-trained sushi chefs. But apart from a supplemental list of specials and a sake selection that has grown to a stunning 40 labels, the menus have changed little. The quality of the offering has likewise remained high. Aika Butter, an appetizer featuring squid sautéed in butter with soy, mirin, and ginger, lives up to the memory of the fish I first had here years ago. Green mussels, exceptionally plump and baked to still quivering perfection in a cloud of bechamel light sauce, are superb. So is the crab croquette, an ethereally light puree of crab meat encased in panko crust, served with ponzu sauce for dipping. But taste the croquette first without the sauce. If you like oily fish and don't mind bones, Aji no Haraki, lightly salted, grilled horse mackerel, is a must. You'll find both of these starters on the supplemental menu, along with the likes of fried squid legs, steamed shrimp dumplings, and grilled smoked salmon. The entree offering covers all the usual bases, as well as local rarities, such as the Japanese variations on a fondue theme, sukiyaki, and shabu-shabu. Shagayaki, a gingery grilled dish offered in pork, beef, and chicken versions, is a delightful alternative for those who find teriyaki too sweet. Tempura, vegetable, shrimp, or mixed seafood, is as good as any you'll find hereabouts. From my perch at the sushi bar, it's obvious that the house specialty rolls are enormously popular. Indeed, the quality and creativity of the rolls are a decidedly notch above the competition, and the selection so extensive there isn't room to print them on all the sushi list. Fortunately, even if you aren't sitting at the sushi bar, most of the waitstaff are familiar with those off-menu rolls. Your server will be happy to tell you about, say, the Scary Jerry, a positively rocco composition of a half dozen varieties of fish and shellfish, tempura bits, spicy mayo, avocado, and smelt roe. Or the Crack Roll, a spicy hand roll starring Toro that's named for its addictive quality, and at $9.20 a pop, you'll feel like you're getting a fix in more ways than one. Tonight, though, I'm sitting at the sushi bar, and the sight of all that pristine fish glistening just inches from my face has put me in a purist mood. Tonight I indulge in a feast of sashimi and nigiri sushi, from buttery yellowtail to firm rice vinegar-washed mackerel. Sea urchin roe, whose shelf life is notoriously short, comes perilously to the funky territory of less-than-ideal freshness. Everything else is irreproachable. For that matter, pretty much everything I sampled over the course of 3 recent visits lives up to my memories of the restaurant in the early days. And of course, when you set such high standards in the beginning, lack of change is a good thing. Again, Waragi's received 4 stars, located at 5910-147 Durley Road in Raleigh, phone number 783-1883. The next restaurant is located in Chapel Hill, and that's Bean and Barrel. And they're located at 50100 Governor's Drive in Governor's Village. Their phone number is 967-9990, and they received 3 stars. Bean and Barrel opened in 2007, and for 3 years, the coffee shop and wine bar settled into a comfortable role as watering hole for residents in Governor's Club and other neighboring communities. Because it's located on the southern fringe of Orange County, a good 5 miles off the beaten path of Chapel Hill, the restaurant was pretty much held to be in a local hangout. The menu was limited, and outsiders weren't always welcomed with as much enthusiasm as regulars. In short, there was no reason to go out of your way to seek out Bean and Barrel. That changed dramatically last year when owners Jason Dell and Chris Inhofeld added a kitchen and hired Sam Allen as chef. Allen, a graduate of New England Culinary Institute who has worked up and down the East Coast and had a 2-year stint in New Orleans, immediately sought to broaden the restaurant's appeal. Allen developed a seasonally changing dinner menu to go with the bar's international selection of 20 wines by the glass. Fresh ground Angus burgers, sandwiches ranging from Chipotle lime chicken to grilled veggies and pimento cheese, and an assortment of salads round out the offering for light appetites in the lunchtime crowd. Prices, most entrees are in the $12 to $15 range, add to the attraction. The offering is well suited to the casual setting, too, with starter options covering a broad spectrum from grilled chicken quesadilla to Honey Island soup, an earthy souvenir of the chef's sojourn in the Bayou country. Spinach, artichoke, and white cheddar dip is a bit skimpy with the first 2 ingredients, but a deep bowl of truffled mac and cheese is richly redolent of the hummus perfume of black truffles. Smokehouse Buffalo Wings get their subtle wood fragrance not from smoking, but from a splash of chipotle in the sauce. Regardless of the method, the wings are fat and juicy in their crisp, lightly sauced skins. The chef's fondness for mushrooms is reflected in the entree offering, too, where it's represented by a creamy mushroom risotto that's chock-a-block with shiitakes and oyster mushrooms. You can jazz up the dish with optional grilled chicken or smoked salmon for a modest surcharge. I'd avoid the salmon, though, whose intense flavor upstages the mushrooms. Fish and chips is a keeper. Purists might quibble that the crust is more tempura-like than traditional beer batter, and the chips are actually skin-on fries, but the cod is moist and flaky, and the batter is satisfyingly light and crunchy. As you might expect, Allen's take on the Creole classic jambalaya is more than respectable and generously loaded with chicken, shrimp, and aioli. The dish needed salt when I sampled it, but I suspect that was an aberration given the overall level of the kitchen's execution. More typical of that execution is the chef's textbook rendering of a pan-roasted airline breast of Ashley Farms chicken. Succulent under a crisp nut-brown skin, it's served with creamy garlic mashed potatoes and a deconstructed tapenade of sun-dried tomatoes and jumbo queen olives. House-made desserts offer sweet temptation to linger over coffee. Recent rewards for the unhurried have included a molten-centered chocolate lava cake, not-too-sweet coconut ice cream, and a spiced fragrant rice pudding crowned with ruby slices of pear poached in red wine. The waitstaff appears to have gotten the message about Bean and Barrel's new attitude, too. The level of attentiveness may vary from one server to the next, but the warmth of the welcome to all comers does not. For all its changes, Bean and Barrel still exudes a laid-back coffeehouse lounge vibe and lives up to that image with an espresso bar and pastries from the 9th Street Bakery in the mornings. Sofa and coffee table groupings share space with bar stools and cafe tables, eclectic artwork by local artists, and a handful of TVs scattered about the room make for a relaxed and inviting setting regardless of the time of day. That's just the sort of place that Ehrenfeld and Dell, childhood friends from Pittsburgh who found themselves reunited as adults in Chapel Hill, were going for all along. And again, Bean and Barrel received 3 stars, located at 50100 Governor's Drive in Governor's Village in Chapel Hill. Phone number 967-9990. In the next restaurant is an Indo-Chinese restaurant located in Cary at 1026 Ryan Road in Village Square. Their phone number is 467-8286, and they received 3 stars. The taste of two worlds under one roof. Bombay Beijing's motto beckons with an invitation to a culinary adventure as exotic as its name. Even so, seasoned gastronomic globetrotters would be reluctant to pack their bags. They've long since learned that a restaurant that divides its attention between two cuisines rarely measures up to one that concentrates on one. But the dishes that make up Bombay Beijing's Twin Bell offering are much more closely intertwined than, say, Japanese and Thai. One side of the menu is traditional Indian fare. On the other is Indo-Chinese, a cuisine that has evolved over the past century as Chinese immigrants in India adapted native dishes to the ingredients of their new home. A prime example of this cultural fusion is chicken Manchurian, a fragrant stir-fry whose flavor, to the Western palate at any rate, is distinguishable from traditional Indian fare only by the subtle presence of soy sauce. Sautéed capsicum and mushroom Manchurian is a delightful and only moderately spicy, unless you request otherwise. Capsicum refers to green peppers, vegetarian variation on the theme under the appetizer heading. So is an entree offering of gobi Manchurian, which is available dry or with gravy. Your waiter may recommend the latter, since it's served with rice. The sauce tends to soften the breading on the cauliflower, however, turning it gummy. I'd ignore the waiter's advice and go for the dry. Save the rice, which is itself a culinary fusion. Long grain Indian basmati rice, cooked Chinese style without saffron or other flavoring, for the incendiary sauce of chili chicken. Or the garlic fish, which serves up a medley of moist catfish, sometimes mahi, and vegetables in a rich gravy sprinkled with toasted garlic. Or the fenugreek punctuated sauce that blankets lean, tender nuggets of meat and lamb methi, a dish that the menu informs you is traditional Indian. It's helpful that the menu is divided into two columns, a sort of cheat sheet, if you will, categorizing dishes of two cuisines whose flavor profiles are at times so similar as to make it difficult for the Western palate to discern the difference. Most of us are familiar with tandoori chicken and vegetable biryani, and it's easy to guess that fried basmati rice and tofu Beijing are Indo-Chinese. But it's nice not to have to guess as to the provenance of, say, chicken corn soup. The cornstarch gives it away as Indo-Chinese, or chili potato fries, which is Indian. Or chicken 65, a dish I first had over a decade ago in a restaurant that offered both cuisines on a menu that didn't distinguish the two. I got into my head that chicken 65 was Indo-Chinese. Bombay Beijing's menu cleared up that misconception for good, and as a bonus delivered an exemplary rendition of the addictively spicy deep-fried nuggets, which, incidentally, are an excellent appetizer companion for one of the area's best selection of Indian beers. Indeed, most of the dishes in the Indian column can hold their own with those at many restaurants exclusively dedicated to the cuisine. Still, it's the Indo-Chinese fare that sets Bombay Beijing apart. The kitchen lives up to the menu's exotic promise, too, the lone exception in my experience being run-of-the-mill spring rolls. Far more representative of the food is Hakka noodles, a tangle of thin noodles and slivers of bright, crunchy vegetables whose airy appearance belies their vibrant flavor. Service is generally efficient in the traditional Indian restaurant fashion. Waitstaff don't hover and may appear inattentive, but they're readily summoned. The dining room is warmly inviting, though blonde woodwork and silk lantern sconces are more evocative of Japan than India or China. The owners, a partnership of veteran restaurateurs and investors, whose holdings include Udupi Cafe and Triangle Indian Market, were understandably loath to replace the attractive decor inherited from the Japanese-Korean restaurant that previously occupied the space. As a result of their thrifty decision, tickets to Bombay Beijing's culinary adventure are a bargain. And again, Bombay Beijing received 3 stars. Located at 1026 Ryan Road in the Village Square in Cary, phone number 467-8286. Bask in a seaside glow. Had enough of the snow and ice? Check out these 2 new Inside the Beltline restaurants, where at least your taste buds can soak up a little Mediterranean sunshine. Warm up your palate with citrusy avgolomano soup or steamed mussels in an ouzo-splashed tomato garlic sauce at The Artisan, and that's located at 410-350 Glenwood South, phone number 900-8224. This opened in December, again on Glenwood South. Choosing from owner-chef Justin Harani's Greek accented mix of traditional and contemporary fare, you should have no trouble keeping the sunny mood alive with entree options ranging from rosemary seared lamb chops to baked whole fish stuffed with pine nuts and spinach. But food is by no means the artisan's only attraction. Peppercini-infused vodka Bloody Marys have quickly found a dedicated following at the bar, which also offers a solid selection of bottled and draft microbrews, including a few local taps, and a wine list with a North Carolina focus. Late nights, the tables are removed and the space morphs into a nightclub setting where local musicians and DJs keep winter at bay with hot tunes into the wee hours of Thursday, Friday, and Saturdays. Or you could just head to the Sahara Mediterranean restaurant, that is, and the latest of a long series of restaurants, the most recent being Village Kebab, to inhabit the little red roof building near Broughton High School, and that's located at 805 West Peace Street, and their phone number is 821-5900. Owned by Nasser and Rania Shamas, who also own the Sahara Hookah Bar down the street, the counter-service eatery serves Middle Eastern fare, specifically the dishes of Raina Shamas' native Syria. Shamas is quick to point out the food is similar to the Lebanese fare that is synonymous with Middle Eastern cuisine to many Americans, with subtle spicing variations being the main difference. Most of the dishes listed on the menu over the counter are familiar favorites, such as hummus, baba ganache, tabbouleh, shawarma, and kebabs. The board does offer a few temptations for adventurous palates in the form of offerings such as chicken liver panini and halawat el jibin, a sweet stuffed cheese dessert. If you're wondering why a Syrian restaurant, or for that matter, its namesake hookah bar and coffee house, is named for a desert in North Africa, give yourself an A in geography. Nasser Shamas explains that the Arabic term Sahara, whose pronunciation is very close to the name of the famous desert, actually means to stay awake all night, which, come to think of it, makes perfect sense for a place where caffeine flows freely. And this is from Quick Bites. If you've always wanted to eat in an authentic taqueria but have been intimidated by the language barrier, have I got a place for you. At Taqueria El Toro, the menu is bilingual and the unfailingly friendly staff speaks fluent English. Even the order here and pickup signs over the counter are in English. The most intimidating thing about the place is the pair of taxidermy heads of the restaurant's namesake bulls mounted on the walls. For all its Anglo-friendly attitude, the food at El Toro is the real Mexican deal. The menu offers more than a dozen traditional taco fillings, from carne asada to chorizo, to al pastor pork de pollo, plus a spicy shredded chicken tinga. And even though you won't have to worry about ordering tongue or tripe by mistake, they are available. Meats are fresh and well-prepared, not surprising, given the owners also own the soon-to-open market Carne Sierra next door. The condiment station is among the most generously stocked I've seen, with everything from fresh chopped cilantro and lime wedges to roasted whole jalapenos and 6 house-made salsas. According to manager Marco Charamillo, corn tortillas will be made on premises as soon as the equipment arrives. In addition to tacos, El Toro's offering runs the gamut from taquera fare, from sopos, tortas, and gorditas to daily and weekend specials such as moraja frita, caldo de camarón, and lamb or goat barbacoa. Everything I've sampled to date has been first rate. El Toro has been a favorite among the local Latino community for a decade. Owners Eldolfo Flores and Lupe Garcia relocated their restaurant last month to a more visible location in a new shopping center just off Tryon Road to broaden its appeal. Transplants from Toluca near Mexico City, Flores and Garcia worked in the hospitality industry out west before moving to the Triangle in the mid-90s. Their experience, Flores worked at Excalibur Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, and Garcia for Disneyland Hotels, is reflected in their restaurant's welcoming vibe. It seems especially fitting that one of them worked for an outfit known as the friendliest place on earth. Give in to Asian persuasion. What is your favorite Asian cuisine? Odds are you'll find it on the menu of one of these newcomers. Sushi 9, and that's located at 3812 Western Boulevard, phone number 900-8203, which opened in December in the old 1010 Chinese Buffet building after a complete makeover, boasts the largest sushi bar in Raleigh. A sweeping 16-seater, whose underside glows with electric blue lights, is certainly among the most eye-catching. But sushi is hardly the only temptation, as the restaurant's name hints, though you may not get the hint if you're not up on Asian numerology. 9 is considered an especially lucky number in Thailand, whose cuisine shares top billing with Japanese among the kitchen's extensive and far-ranging offering. Sprinkled among the coconut curries and the hibachi grill fare, you'll also find scattered sampling of dishes from across the continent, from General Chow's chicken to Vietnamese po. In North Raleigh, the owner of Bedford Sushi and Grill, and that's located at 3607 Falls River Avenue, in the shops at Bedford, and their phone number is 747-9720. And then they don't let the small size of the restaurant limit the menu. Ty Nugent, who has owned a number of area sushi bars, opened Ty's Noodles in Morrisville in 2009. Taking his cue from the success of that venture, he expanded on the noodle shop theme with a Pan-Asian offering that covers a broad spectrum from dynamite roll to Saigon street noodles to crispy Thai basil duck. His brother, Tom Nugent, is sold on the more is more approach to Asian restaurants, too. Tasu, his Pan-Asian concept in Raleigh's Briardale Shopping Center, has proved so successful that he plans to open his second one in Carey's Crossroads Plaza in April. In the wake of all these Pan-Asian newcomers, there's still room for the single cuisine purist, or in the case of Bangkok Thai, purist plural. And Bangkok Thai is located at 13200-131 New Falls of Neuse Road, and their phone number is 554-1561. The restaurant's owners, sisters Arpapan and Durapan Puzuji, have chosen to stick with the cuisine of their native Thailand. They're especially proud of their Pad Khi Mao, which features authentic egg noodles rather than the commonly substituted broad noodles. The menu covers all the usual bases in traditional Thai repertoire, spiced up with the occasional surprise, such as Bangkok spaghetti or soft-shell crab curry. And the next thing we're going to read is actually from Taste This. When it comes to burgers, I'm a purist. I like to keep the toppings to a minimum so that the beef, ground fresh, ideally, and grilled to a juicy pink-centered medium rare, is the star of the show. You can keep your sauerkraut, your baked beans, even your foie gras. Okay, I admit I do on occasion walk on the wild side. Here's a roundup of my most memorable adventures. Cafe Curry Leaves in Morrisville. Alu Tiki Burger, Indian spice potato patty with lettuce, cucumber, tomatoes, green chutney, and tamarind chutney. Hey, vegetarians need a break from their bean burger routine, too. Cherry Bomb Grill in Raleigh. Cherry Bomb, cherry marmalade, blue cheese crumbles, lettuce, tomato, onion. Yep, cherry marmalade on a burger. Don't knock it till you've tried it. Glass Half Full in Carrboro. Mini burgers, Cane Creek farm beef, aged cheddar, applewood smoked bacon, and truffle aioli on house-baked buns. You knew what had to happen. The humble slider goes gourmet. The only burger in Durham, the breakfast burger. Hormone-free beef chuck ground fresh daily, topped with a fried green tomato, homemade pimento cheese, and a fried local egg served on a locally baked bun. Hits the spot at lunchtime, too. The Salem Street Pub in Apex, the My Wife Told Me It Wouldn't Sell Burger, half a pound of beef topped with bacon, cheddar, peanut butter, and honey. Maybe it's a guy thing. And the Tribeca Tavern in Cary, the Bodacious Bison Melt, a half pound of all-natural Montana bison patty, Chapel Hill Creamery smoked mozzarella, caramelized onions, and Thousand Island dressing on toasted rye. Introduced just a couple weeks ago, this one immediately vaulted to a bestseller status. Clearly, I'm not the only one who likes to walk on the wild side. Finally, we just have a couple minutes left to read the last quick bites. When Jamil Kadura opened Mediterranean Deli in 1992, it's a safe bet he never imagined how much change the next two decades would bring to his restaurant. Starting out in a tiny space with 12 seats, a 6-foot deli case, and a few modest shelves of Middle Eastern groceries, the shop did so well that he was able to move into a roomier quarters 3 doors down in 1995. The restaurant has since expanded 3 times, and with each expansion, the length of the deli case has grown. The most recent and most dramatic change came in 2008, when an in-house bakery was added and the deli case grew so long it turned the corner. Now covering the better part of 2 walls of the large open dining room, the steam tables and glass-fronted display cases now offer an eye-popping selection of about 80 hot and cold specialties, spanning the Middle East from Lebanese shawarma to Greek salad to Turkish doner kebabs. At the back of the dining room, the bakery runs out house-baked pita and fritera, pita pies with toppings including spinach, ground lamb with roasted tomatoes, and spicy Turkish sausage. Made with organic flour from Lindley Mills, the pita adds to the appeal of sandwiches and entrees, including the Moroccan-style lamb shank platter with black and golden raisin-studded couscous that has earned a devoted following on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights. For all its growth and change, one constant has been primarily responsible for Mediterranean Deli's enduring success, its owner. The continuing freshness of the ever-expanding and increasingly organic offering is a reflection of Kadura's philosophy that the quality of his restaurant's offering should not suffer at the expense of quantity. Add a healthy dose of the famed Middle Eastern hospitality, expressed in a selection of complimentary olives, pickles, and other goodies on a condiment station that's as big as the original deli case, and it's no wonder Mediterranean Deli will be celebrating its 20th anniversary next year. And it looks like that we have run out of time for today's episode of Restaurant Reviews. Be sure you listen again. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Missy Hollander, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.